NPR.
Hey everyone, it's Cardiff. This is the Indicator from Planet Money. Imagine that it is 6 months from now, or maybe 12 months, and a U.S. pharmaceutical company has successfully discovered a vaccine for coronavirus. So out of all the vaccine candidates right now across the whole world, and there's more than 150 of them, the first one shown to work happens to belong to an American company. And it's time to start producing that vaccine en masse to get everybody immunized. Well, in that case, the U.S. government might do all it can to make sure that everyone in the U.S. is immunized first, as quickly as possible, before the vaccine is shared with other countries. And that sounds like it would make perfect sense. I mean, the U.S. government is accountable first to U.S. citizens, not to the rest of the world. But according to trade economist Chad Bown, that would be a big mistake.
Because we live in such an interdependent world, both economically and socially, it turns out that it's actually not in our best interest to only think about vaccinating ourselves, but to try to figure out a way that we can share vaccines with basically the entire world. That turns out to be in our own best interest.
Along with Thomas Boyke, Chad has a long new article in Foreign Affairs magazine titled "The Tragedy of Vaccine Nationalism," where he explains why that is. So today on the show, we speak with Chad about his argument that an agreement between countries to share a vaccine would be not just good for the world, but also, for a few kind of surprising reasons, good for the country which does manage to invent a successful vaccine first. That is coming up right after a quick break.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Barracuda Total Email Protection. According to the FBI, last year, cybercrimes cost $3.5 billion. Get the free ebook, 13 Email Threat Types to Know About Right Now, at barracuda.com/NPR.
Chad Bown, welcome back to The Indicator.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, part of the argument you make is that actually coming up with a vaccine and then scaling up its production is super complicated, and it involves all these other countries in the first place, even if the vaccine is first discovered in one country and you just try to immunize everybody in that country first, right?
Yeah, so I think the first important thing to note about vaccines that I think many people don't know, and I didn't know before I started working on this, is that only a handful of countries around the world have the ability to produce vaccines. They're very, very sophisticated manufacturing processes. You need billion-dollar facilities that have all kinds of quality controls in them, require all types of fancy equipment. And then, of course, you know, the scientists that are going to get you there. But then it also is going to require inputs. And at this stage, we still don't even know yet what the vaccines are going to look like. The science hasn't answered that question. But the vaccine could require inputs that we don't have locally here in the United States, that we can only get from other countries.
Yeah, and by inputs, you mean specifically like there are materials that are required for most vaccines that might have to be sourced and bought from other countries. And you give this kind of great example of this compound that comes from Chile and then is processed in Sweden that is used in most vaccines. That's really interesting.
Yeah, so there's this adjuvant called, it comes from the chili bark tree in Chile. So, you know, it's kind of the only place in the world you can find it. It's processed in Sweden. Now, neither of those two countries, interestingly, neither of them actually manufacture vaccines. But if you're going to manufacture a vaccine somewhere else, you may need access to, you know, to that process. It's kind of like a chemical thing to help make the vaccine work. And so that means you're relying on stuff coming out of Chile or coming out of Sweden if you want to make a vaccine at all. And that's not it, right? There's lots of chemicals that goes into these things, but you also may need things like, you know, the vials, the little glass bottles or syringes, lots of little types of components, parts, and inputs that, you know, you kind of can't fully think through all the stuff that you might need until we know what the scientists have told us the vaccine is ultimately going to require.
Yeah, and this kind of brings up the possibility that, let's say hypothetically in the U.S., we discover the vaccine first and we hoard it. We do not share the vaccine with other countries that might need it, that might want it. There could be the possibility for a backlash from these other countries that control those inputs. So, for example, Sweden could say, yeah, forget it. We're not going to export to you this adjuvant that you need for the vaccine unless you agree to share the vaccine with us and with Europe, right?
Exactly. If all of a sudden we were to decide that we wanted to just start hoarding and keep it all for ourselves, other countries could essentially play the same game and hoard the inputs. And so we wouldn't be able to actually make the vaccine in the first place, and we'd all be worse off.
And then it might also lead to this kind of siloed pursuit of all these materials, of all these supplies, and not using the vaccine in the most efficient way globally, right? Because all the countries are trying to get the vaccines and the supplies and hoard them. And it means that, like, you'll just have these sort of pockets of immunization rather than spreading the immunity around the world in a way that sort of gets everybody healthy the quickest.
What we're seeing right now is governments doing a bit of that. They're trying to buy up everything that they can think of that they might need to be able to make these vaccines. The problem there is you're competing against each other and bidding up the prices of those things sort of unnecessarily. You know, that wouldn't be the case if you were cooperating. That means taxpayers are ultimately going to end up paying a lot more than they would otherwise. And it's ultimately going to lead to shortages, you know, in certain places where the vaccine is ultimately not going to be able to be developed, even though the science might be there for them to be able to do so.
Yeah, and I want to talk about the economics of what happens if one country, again, let's say the U.S., does successfully immunize itself but does not share the vaccine with other countries. There are consequences to the U.S. economy itself of other countries remaining sick, of still remaining, you know, under lockdown because of the pandemic.
There are major, major economic consequences. Obviously, the first and most important reason we'd want to share is the public health. But even just thinking about the economics, for our economy here in the United States to run, we need access to, you know, lots of inputs, things that we buy from other countries to be able to manufacture things here. So think about the automobile industry, right? We buy a lot of, you know, engines and, you know, tires and things from Mexico. If the Mexican economy is shut down because they're still suffering under the pandemic, we can't get the parts that we need. Our factories can't run. Also, we want to export to the world. You know, we need to export cars. We need to export airplanes. And if there's no foreign demand because their economies aren't growing, because they're still suffering under the pandemic, we're not going to be able to be growing as much as we would be able to otherwise. And then, of course, we want to be able to get out. Tourism is huge. We want both, you know, to go visit other places, but we want other people to be able to leave their countries and come here. And if not everybody has been able to receive the vaccine and treat the pandemic, that's going to result in travel restrictions and also just put a huge crimp on a huge chunk of economic activity as well.
Yeah. And then finally, this would raise the question of, well, how do you do it better? What is a way to get other countries to commit in advance, to get all countries to commit in advance to share a vaccine, given that right now there's not a lot of trust between countries, especially between the U.S. and China, between the U.S. and Europe, when it comes to trade? So how do you get that commitment in advance?
This is a hugely important point. There is, you know, virtually no trust. And we saw this early on in the pandemic. We saw countries already imposing export restrictions, not willing to sell, you know, personal protective equipment and ventilators and that kind of stuff to their trading partners, hoarding it. And the concern is that the same thing would happen or will happen once we actually develop a vaccine. But I'm convinced that, you know, you could actually come up with a vaccine trade and investment kind of an agreement, a cooperative agreement that governments could sign up to once they just realize how interdependent we are. And I think there's one other component to this as well, which is even if we here in the United States discover the first vaccine, what the scientists in other contexts have taught us is that the first vaccine isn't always necessarily the best vaccine. The subsequent vaccines, which may be developed in some other country, may turn out to be better. They may be easier to administer. They may last longer. There may be fewer side effects. And we may want access to that one, too, here in the United States. And the problem is if we've shut off the world from our initial vaccine, then if a better one comes along, you know, sometime down the line, the rest of the world may be unwilling to share theirs with us.
Chad Bown, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
This episode of The Indicator was produced by Brittany Cronin. The Indicator's editor is Patty Hirsch, and The Indicator is a production of NPR.